I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. Firmer footing, but another fiscal cliff looming, a midterm evaluation of Governor Rick Scott, school safety, school funding, and how about charter schools, health care, Alan Grayson back in Washington, Lawson Lamar out of office in Orange Osceola County. Ahead, 90.7's political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry look into their 2013 crystal balls. That's next on Intersection. I'm joined by 90.7 political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry. Dick Batchelor, of course, a former Democratic State House representative. Happy New Year to you, sir.
Happy New Year. Great to be back.
Great to have you with us.
But all that stuff has happened already. Yeah.
And let's talk to Lou Fry, former Republican congressman. Lou, happy 2013 to you.
Happy health and happiness to everybody, and may the Congress agree on something important.
Well, speaking of what the Congress can agree on, it came down to the wire, but President Obama was able to conjure up an agreement with congressional leaders on the fiscal cliff. It spares most taxpayers from a massive income tax hike, but still unresolved are cuts to defense and domestic programs. In Florida, these cuts could hit everything from defense jobs to Everglades restoration, NASA programs. So I wonder, where do you think, Lou Fry, that the fiscal cliff negotiations have left Florida at this point?
Well, first thing, let's look and see what the negotiations were about and who really did it. I think if you're saying who did good and who did bad, I think you've got to give Obama a real plus for this, for political capital, the way he handled this. He was very, very good on the stump as usual. I think you have to put John Boehner down as surviving, and he's burned a lot of his political capital. When you go into a conference and there's rookies talking against you and do those things, that is not a good thing. Plus, of the four Republican leaders, three of them voted against the bill. Boehner was the only one to do it. So you look at that for going forward. What it says is that Boehner is going to have to be more conservative if he wants to be the speaker in the next few months, if there isn't a revolution. And you look at it, and you know the Democrats in the Senate, they've got a good game plan, do nothing, and don't get in any trouble. And the majority leader in the Senate is doing a great job of defending that. So you're left with the minority leader in the Senate, and you're left with the House of Representatives to cut a deal. And if they don't cut a deal, then we're back in big trouble.
Do you think Boehner, a lot of folks have talked about his personality, his leadership style, maybe too laid back for that leadership post in the House?
Oh, no. He's good. He's a good leader. He's hung in there through some very difficult times. He's had incredible issues come up time after time after time. Real question lies within the Republican conference. What do they want to do? Do they want to be, quote, right and see the debt ceiling get busted and have a lot of problems, or are they going to want to compromise? And there are areas left to compromise. There's a lot of areas left that they can hang on to this bill. I think that it's going to be a Christmas tree, Dick, to a little bit.
Where do you think compromise could happen?
Well, I think it could happen in the Medicare thing. I think it could happen in Social Security, in the age of Social Security, what you can get, what the taxes are. I think there's a number of items that you can look at, and I think Dick has laid some of them out before. I'll let him talk about what he sees there.
Well, Dick Batchelor, what do you think about that? And also the role of Vice President Joe Biden, good for Democrats in this
area. I should have said he deserves a real pat in the back for what he did.
Joe Lunchbucket's doing very well. As Democrats need their own, we've got one now. It's not Joe the Plumber, but it's Joe the Lunchbucket. So I think he did a very good job. But let me tell you, this is just a sigh of relief, but it should be only momentarily. Number one, the agreement they reached, where it's not that good of
a short-term fix.
We could talk with short-term fix with a lot of Christmas tree ornaments attached to it. They cannot help themselves. They cannot pass just a bare-bones agreement. They have to add up tax breaks. We could talk about those later on, number one. Number two, you've got fiscal cliff number two coming. Debt limits. The ceiling on the debt limit is going to be very crucial. And the question, would the Republicans try to hold that hostage to debt reduction? And if they do that, what signal does it send to the markets? What if we don't reach an agreement to pay off our debt? And what happens to our bond rating? What happens to the credit ratings? And that is playing with fire there. And then you got sequestration. You get a whole host of issues. So they're going to have to learn how to play nice. I'm not sure they can. These are very contentious issues.
What do you think about the performance of the Florida delegation in this? Notably, Senator Marco Rubio, one of eight senators to vote against this. Is that a surprise?
I think Rubio is very smart politically. I think he's doing what he believes. He's doing it in a good way, in a gentle way. I read his thing just before he came over here a couple of times, and it's very well reasoned and very well laid out. It was safe to do, too, because the Senate was going to pass it over really big time, so it wasn't a good thing. The Florida delegation really didn't have much to play in this in the House. And, of course, in the Senate, because you're one of 100, you always have a chance to play, which shows you the difference between the House and the Senate and why some people want to go to the Senate.
And Rubio used in his reasoning concerns about how long-term and far out are these changes that were passed in the
deal. But Lou's right. He played it safe because he's in the U.S. Senate. The Democrats are going to pass the bill. Paul Ryan, on the other hand, who wants to run for president probably the same time that Rubio does, and it kind of fell on the sword and voted for it, even though Eric Cantor voted against it. So,
and you had down in South Florida, Vern Buchanan crossing over party lines to vote with Dems in the House.
Yeah, and I think they had to. I mean, and Boehner, I agree with Lou. Boehner has the toughest job there is because he's got a Tea Party out of people, and 52 out of the 58 Tea Partiers, you know, voted against the bill. And can he get them in line? I think they're. I'm going to give advice to both Speaker Boehner and the President at the same time. Read LBJ. Now, what Boehner needs to learn how to. You know, to really lead. And if you don't serve him well, you need to be off the committees because he's got some tough decisions to make, number one. And number two, the president can learn from LBJ, who said, once you win, you can be magnanimous. The president has to be very careful not to overplay his hand here. You only have so much political currency. He's elevated that, but you can lose it very quickly. He needs to be very careful not to overplay his hand.
Very few presidents in a second term have done well, whether it's Reagan or whoever you're going to talk about. Also, when you look at the numbers, it's really important you look at those numbers. Without Nancy Pelosi holding the Democrats in the House together, the liberal Democrats together, I think it was 60-some votes that they got for the bill. And though they need those votes from the Democrats, the Republicans do, in order to pass something on the debt ceiling. Mm-hmm. And the question is, how can they get them? What do they have to give away? What's she willing to give up? She's now a player. She hasn't been for the last few years, but she's now a player. Mm-hmm. And as long as she can keep those votes in her pocket and deliver them, you know, that they're going to have to deal with her.
Well, let's stay in Congress for just a moment here to talk about U.S. Representative John Mica, who is transitioning from his position as chair of the Congressional Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. He's now going to head up Government Operations Subcommittee. Mica, of course, Republican from Winter Park. Lou Fry, you've been up there. How exciting is the Government Operations Subcommittee?
It can be very, very, very exciting. It has the ability to get into a lot of things like what's happened over overseas. In
kind
terms
of a watchdog.
The embassy. Yeah, and it usually takes some really hot items that are really interesting items, and you can do it. The other thing is, don't forget, John is a senior Republican on the Transportation Committee.
Still there.
He's very, very much there. And obviously you'd rather be chairman, but they have the rules, and he isn't. But John Mica is still going to be a power. And thank goodness, from the standpoint of the state and the issues that we have back here and the transportation issues, that John's going to be up there doing the best for the country, but also making sure that the best also helps Florida.
And also the speaker did us a favor, too, by appointing Dan Webster, a congressman from this area. Keep in mind, Dan is the former Speaker of the House, former Majority Leader in the Florida Senate. He was like Mr. Transportation. In fact, a part of the 419 is named after him. He's like knows about transportation. So they have him there with his knowledge from the legislative experience, and they have John Mica tutoring him or mentoring him. I think we can still get what we need from this area.
What do you think in terms of Democratic committee assignments, Dick Batcher? Are you pleased with what you see?
Yeah, for the ones I'm really attuned to, I really have paid that much attention to all of them, to be honest with you. But I'm happy, let's say.
Well, at least they've got four more in Florida, so right. They've got something to argue about.
Well,
but,
I'm just
but
happy
they didn't
Alan,
do very well.
I'm just happy Alan West is gone, whatever that means.
Well, here's Alan West might be gone, but Alan Grayson is back. Let's talk about what Grayson might be doing as he gets sworn into office here, known for taking progressive stances, but a bombastic approach back in Congress after losing a re-election bid. And so what do you think, Lou Fry, Alan Grayson, is he going to be more tempered in terms of his approach in the Congress? Does he have to be more tempered?
Well, you don't have to be anything.
Tempered. Anything.
Yeah, I think the first 30 days will show how he's going to play it. Is he going to be the person who gets headlines all over the country and gets some money from California and that? If he does, I think you're going to see the Republicans right here start now with a campaign of finding somebody to run against him. I, you know, for the good of the country, I hope he is somewhat tempered.
Well, Dick Batchelor, what do you think? Is this a different time politically than when Alan Grayson was first in office? And can he play that role kind of as the firebrand given the political climate in Washington today?
Well, let me say this. First of all, I think so. You can't go through a defeat and not have some sense of moderation of where you are. But what's more sobering, speaking of moderation, but what's more sobering is the fact that that district he won in was drawn for a Hispanic population. Yeah. And so there will be a Hispanic Democrat or Republican keyed up to get run against him. So he is going to have an opponent. And if there's a Hispanic opponent, I think he's going to take it more seriously. So I think he has the opportunity. And the question is, too, being that you're the minority in the House, you can still be the flamethrower, but still you got to get some things done.
Yeah, and if I recommend the Republican Party. They asked me what I thought. I said, look, get somebody, find some Hispanic right now who's well qualified to do it. Get behind, don't have a bunch of primaries, get behind somebody and start running today for that seat.
This gets into back to this idea. You're always running.
Well, absolutely.
It's always happening.
Every single day. Yeah. In fact, it was an article. I cannot remember the numbers, but a United States senator, the day they're reelected for 6 years, have to raise so many thousands of dollars a day to finance a campaign. And unfortunately, not only raising money, but everybody's running for something. That's one of the shortfalls, I think, of term limits because, you know, if you're elected today to the legislature, by next year, you need to decide whether or not you want to be Speaker of the House 6 years out from your last term. So term limits is having an impact on it, too, and fundraising. Now, let me very quickly applaud Senator Gates, the Senate president.
Senator Don Gates. We're talking legislature now.
Yeah, right. And because what he has said is that one of his priorities is to do away with these committees' continuing existence because about 45 members of the legislature, House and Senate, created their own political action committees, and there are no limits. There's not like a $500 limit for a candidate. You could go raise $250,000 from, you know, Disney or the Dairy Farmers or whomever, and then you had your own war chest to give money out to people you want to support you. So it was all politics all the time. If they do away with that, that'll be one of the best things they've done.
Well, I don't want to get stuck in Tallahassee just yet. Let me go back to the Hill with
all right.
Lou
do
Fry.
We have to
stay,
take the Hill.
Stay with
take
us,
the
listeners.
Hill. Okay.
We're taking the high-speed rail to D.C. Okay. Lou Fry, you have some reflections on Chuck Hagel, President Obama's pick to head DOD.
Yeah. I knew Chuck when he was the chief staffer for John Y. McAllister from Nebraska. One of his jobs in the morning was to put coffee on in his office so that John and I would have coffee over there. And also, he kept the cigar box full. I'm not going to confess that I had some cigars, but I probably had one or two. And when Chuck got out, when he got out of politics as such for a while, when John was in, I was in business with him and on the cell phone business and that. He was part of the company that we had in the cell phone. And interestingly enough, right now he's on the board of a company at the fairly high level, and I'm on the board at sort of a low level.
He might be on the board of a bigger
but,
level.
Chuck took some very tough positions up there, and I think he's going to have a tough time being nominated. There's no reason if Obama wants him with the votes they have and so forth. There's no reason that he shouldn't get the votes.
Now, there's been precedent for having a Republican under a Democratic president before. The previous Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates, a holdover from the Bush administration. Do you think Dick Batchelor?
And how about Maine? Up in Maine, we had a Billy Cohn.
Yeah, from under the Clinton administration.
Yeah, under the Clinton administration. So,
that's right. William Cohen, right.
So there is a president for it. I think the president is smart to nominate a Republican. And the Republicans are put in kind of what I call approach avoidance conflict. Approach is you want to support him. He's one of us, United States Senator, former United States Senator, Republican, Vietnam, well-decorated. The other side is that some of the positions he's taken on Iran, some of the positions he's taken on Israel. Now, can he live those down? Now, you see Senate Democratic leaders out there already supporting him. It'll be an interesting fight, too.
And do you want to pick that as a fight? I mean, you've only got so many times you can go out and do it. Do you want to use what political capital the Republicans have in the Senate, which isn't a heck of a lot on that issue?
I'd advance him and John Kerry at the same time for Secretary of State.
Well, I'm going to advance our conversation. Tell our listeners you're on Intersection right now on 90.7 WMFVM. We're talking with political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry. Dick Batchelor, former Democratic State House Representative. Lou Fry, former Republican Congressman. I'm Mark Simpson. And we're going to talk about Rick Scott here in a moment. What do you think, listeners? Is Governor Scott doing a good job? You can tell us about it on Facebook or Twitter. Send an email to intersection@wmfe.org. So I'm going to put it to you, Lou Fry, midpoint of a four-year term for the governor. Unemployment down 3 percentage point. Economic outlook maybe looking a little brighter, but polls still show the governor is unpopular. What kind of grade do you give him?
Well, to start with, I gave him a D minus, really, but I think he's changed around the way he's handled himself, the way he's gotten hired people who know what they're doing, and he's gone out, I think, on some pretty good issues. Problem is that's, that impression of what happened first couple years is really sitting there, and there are people, cabinet members, looking to say, well, I thought maybe I'd wait for 6 years, but maybe this is a time to, or 4 years, to jump in on this race. And the big thing that he has going for him, though, I don't think has changed. I don't think his bank account's gotten much littler. And he can sit down. What did he write a check? Was
$78 million.
$78 million last time, Dick. And if he wants to do that again, that can make up for a lot of ideas that didn't go well.
You mentioned that Republicans could be preparing to go for their own run to challenge Governor Scott. Do you think that the party is sealed around the governor more so than when he first came into office?
Well, the Republican Party in the last election certainly didn't show any great strength.
The governor not able to deliver Florida for
not able to, and as a matter of fact, they kept the governor Scott pretty well out of it.
Absolutely,
and you've got that trial still floating around somewhere, which could or could not involve some people close to the governor. I don't think it will, but you know, it's the longer it stays, the more nervous people get, and so it's going to be an iffy thing. If you're going to run against the governor, though, you're going to have to start like now. You're really going to have to go out and start and raise money. And a lot of people say they're for you, but very few people. I'd be interested to see who writes the first checks.
Absolutely.
How does this translate, Dick Batchelor, for Democrats that want to challenge the Tallahassee Republican-dominated control structure in wanting to get into the governor's office? If Democrats were able to take the state of Florida, does that deliver a knockout blow? Does that translate for the gubernatorial race as a knockout blow?
The answer is it's going to be there is a great opportunity here, but do we have the bench, number one? And right now, Alex Sink, unfortunately, just lost her husband, Bill McBride, you know, who had also run for governor, and that will temper her decision-making probably on that. Nan Rich, in the Senate Minority Leader, wants to run, but she really doesn't have any name recognition. But is there a Democrat that could step forward and run? Now's the time to run. There will be plenty running because the governor is so weak. The point with the governor is, you know, the first impression is a lasting impression, and that's his downfall because that first impression he gave to the voters is still there today, and they can't seem to unring that bell.
Boy, what is the first impression then for now Democrat Charlie Crist? He's a former governor.
Well, you know, if you ask me personally versus ask me just generally speaking, if you look at the polls say we like him. And if he ran today, he would beat Scott. Now, Lewis said this before, name recognition is the first several million dollars of your getting in the governor's race. Crist has that, having been attorney general, commissioner of education, a state senator, you know, governor.
Worked for Connie Mack.
So he's got that name recognition. So if he wants to run, in all candor, he's a way out there now. And he is running, actually. Every place I go, I've got a Morgan billboard with Charlie Crist's name on it. Don't text and drive.
That was the Jack Eckert thing. He said when we ran against each other that every time that I got an endorsement in the newspaper, his stock went up.
buy more ads. Yeah.
Well, of course, you talk about Tallahassee, you got to talk about the legislature. And Dick Batchelor, you were touching on this just a moment ago. But let's look ahead maybe to the spring legislative session. Right now, everyone's talking about gun control, stand your ground laws, especially after the school shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut. Lawmakers were already facing debate in the stand your ground realm because of the Trayvon Martin shooting in Sanford last year. How do you think the Sandy Hook shooting complicates this issue for the legislature, and what do you think might play out?
I don't think it does, because it's totally, I think, unrelated. There was no stand your ground. There were men, young men, just went in and killed 26 people.
But bringing up the issue of gun control and changing
but,
the rules on that?
Overarching at a 50,000-foot level, it maybe has a philosophical debate, but I think stand your ground will, excuse the pun, but standing on its own. But I think Chris Smith and others want to revisit that, and because there's so many cases now where there are conflicts. I mean, really contrary decisions by the courts on that. So I think the legislature has to revisit that.
Lou Fry, do you think that Florida's gun laws could be up for review this legislative session?
I certainly think that the some of the guns, the use of some of the guns and the ammunition, for 30-clip ammunition and that will be something that will be up, because I think that's going to be up nationally, and I would not be surprised to see both parties support that part of the gun issue.
But let me interject here, and I know we're bouncing back to the federal for just a moment, but gun control is where it will take place. You know, the assault weapons ban is expired. They're going to back and revisit that. But, I'm giving a lot of free advice on welcome, I'm sure, to the president, but you got to be careful. That's another health care debate. You know, how much political currency do you have? If you have a controversial Secretary of Department of Defense, you're going to use your currency to get through there. You get debt ceiling limit. You know, you've got sequestration. You've got all of these things. You only have so much. Do you want to bring gun control front and center and take on the NRA now? Not that you shouldn't, but politically, should you right now?
You know, you mentioned jumping back up to the federal level. Let's talk about Rick Scott is meeting on the day that we speak here with the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Catherine Sebelius, about the Affordable Care Act. Does Rick Scott have any room to maneuver on not implementing this, Dick Batchelor?
No, it's the law of the land. The courts upheld it. There was a proposed constitutional amendment which was defeated. He just needs to read the tea leaves. The fact is, health care is going to work. You need to set up a managed exchange system for it, number one. And number two, you've got to focus on expanding Medicaid costs.
So what's the point of this meeting in Washington? To say, we really don't like it, but we're going to go along? Or what do you think?
If you're getting run out of town, you should get in front of the crowd so it looks like you're leading a parade. So he's trying to lead a parade that is not going anyplace, in my opinion.
Lou Fry, care to weigh in?
I agree with them. I mean, you go up, a lot of times you run up, people come up to Washington and announce something or do something, knowing full well they can't do it, but they get great press out of it and that, and for a while.
Yeah, so you just gave them some.
Well,
certainly as we talk about security and schools, the legislature could be getting a call from Mayor Teresa Jacobs of Orange County this week, coming out saying that, yes, deputies are now being stationed in elementary schools in unincorporated Orange County, but there's only enough money for the remainder of the school year and likely not going into the next school year. So where do we find money for that, and what do you think about it, Lou?
Well, what I think about is Dick Batchelor had a great idea a few years back, which was to put a half cent on the on our sales tax and use it for building schools. And actually, it's been done. They actually built schools with it. We've gotten Sam.
A new one opened up today.
Yeah, and I was wondering, with people talk about this and the needs for the thing, I was really wondering, is this one of those issues where maybe, a tenth of a cent or a quarter of a cent or a half a cent would go into a fund whose sole job would be to provide security to our schools for our kids? I think an idea like that is something that's really needed, so we don't spend a lot of time screaming and yelling, but we provide something for our kids. Can you imagine the heartbreak? With kids and grandkids, it just really, truly tears you apart. But I think unless something unnatural, if you will, in the sense happens, we have to do something outside the box.
Well, the interesting thing, this deputy's being paid for now with overtime payments, mm-hmm. And Teresa Jacobs saying she would have to talk to lawmakers, legislators in Tallahassee about maybe trying to get more money. How would that work coming from Tallahassee, Dick Batchelor?
Well, it probably wouldn't, number one. Number two, there's another side of this story, and that is going into this vote on the hills, catastrophe that happened, they had no choice but to vote for this. On the other hand, you've got the sheriff sitting there saying, you're taking $3 million out of my budget. I need to prioritize, Are there high risk in the elementary schools for this to happen in Orange County? One, number two, if the risk is high, what schools are there? Are they all schools? And juxtapose that against what I'm now spending my money on, keeping criminals off the street. So it's a very tough to vote, but it was a close proximity to what happened. So there was no one was going to pose those questions. Yeah. But I think the logical question you have to pose, and do you want to do it, and can you afford to do it, and how? But I don't think the Florida legislature is going to do any funding for it.
Do you think then also for the legislature, what is your prediction for top issue this session?
Well, let me make one point on the NRA. We could do them a favor, because if you listen to what LePere said, he basically said that there should be
the president.
Said there should be an armed officer in every elementary school. So why don't we do this? Is tax guns and ammunition to fund that program. So that would be one at least worthy of debate, and I'm sure it would incite a little debate.
Do you think Marion Hammer of the Huntsman Association up in Tallahassee could be?
Well, she's always running around with the hair on fire, so she'll be running around with the hair on fire. But lay that out there. If there is a nexus, go ahead and lay it out and have the debate. But the big issue is really going to be the budget, but also really Medicaid, because again, under the Affordable Care Act, you know, it's not mandatory, but you can now spend Medicaid for people who are not now covered. And are you going to expand that Medicaid coverage to cover more people in the state of Florida? And right now, we're spending probably about $20 billion a year on Medicaid out of a $75 billion budget. So that will be
the fiscal issue. And Dick laid out very well is the one that's, I think, going to be key as to what they do. If there isn't enough money, they've taken away from education, they haven't given it back. We got the Medicare thing. We got the question of, you know, guns for schools, if you will, and that. And I think that the legislature is going to be a heck of a time on these issues.
At least they're not doing redistricting this time around.
They're not, but I complimented Senator Gates earlier, the Senate president, but on the one issue, and that was the political committee's number one. But I also have said, along with the speaker, that they want to also do election reform. They said these long lines are unacceptable. So I really have to give them good points.
And that's because of rules passed by the legislature,
right, precisely,
in the last
go-round.
But
at least they got the guts to go back and look at it and make changes. I think that's a pat in the back for them.
Keep in mind, Adam Putnam, who's Commissioner of Agriculture, spoke to the Republican Committee meeting here last week and said, we got our teeth kicked in. There's no other way to put it. We got our teeth kicked in. There are people who are reading tea leaves, burning bushes, and having epiphanies now. You've got to look at those issues and walk back on some of those issues. And it's smart to do. You can't get caught in this time warp. If you do, you're going to lose the next time around.
And by the way, was this his first speech in his governor's race?
Well, what do you think, Lou Fry?
That was a good one.
That was a good one. I mean, yes, sir.
Let me encourage anyone to run against the governor. Yeah. Far be it from me.
Let me just get a quick thought. We're seeing a lot of newly elected officials getting sworn in this week. Lawson Lamar, one of them, leaving office as state attorney for Orange and Osceola County, being replaced by the Casey Anthony prosecutor, Jeff Ashton. Lamar, of course, had been in for six consecutive terms. How important is that transition for Central Florida, do you think, Lou Fry?
Well, I think it's been a very nice, smooth transaction. I think both it has been.
We've heard some complaints, though, from some corners about the makeup of senior staff and not enough representation of minorities.
There's always going to be that, but I think it's the kind of thing that's a self-contained burn. And I think that Lawson deserves a pat in the back for all he did over the many years. And I think, Jeff, we hope that they run a good shop and have no funny things happen.
Dick Batchelor, what do you say?
More free advice. Jeff Ashton needs to listen very closely to Lawson Lamar. Lawson was a great sheriff, great state's attorney. Now, Ashton's in there now. And don't make changes because you think changes need to be made or because Lawson did in that way. For instance, they've now gotten rid of the domestic violence prosecutors. A very, very bad decision. 60% of the homicides in unincorporated Orange County are because of domestic violence. He needs to revisit that issue and focus on those kind of crimes.
We'll be watching to see what happens. We've been speaking with political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry. Dick Batchelor, a former Democratic State House representative and head of the Dick Batchelor Management Group. Always good to see you, Dick.
Thank you. Likewise.
And Lou Fry, former Republican congressman, attorney at Lounge, Jostick, Doster, Canner, and Reed. Always great to have you in as well, Mr. Fry.
Looking forward to another exciting year, but I hope a good year for all of us.
Conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at WMFE.org/intersection. There you can always sign up for our weekly podcast, and support comes from our listeners. Amy Green is assistant producer. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks so much for listening.